I'm going to hit record again. And testing one, testing two, you may manifold. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. That's you, Alan. That's your cue, which also rhymes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I don't have any rhymes, unfortunately. I only have the 10 lines into your microphone that ensure that each syllable sounds as it should. And that's all the things. Press the pants and sew a button on the vest. Swan dive was far short of perfect.
It's always an adventure. That's why I like testing live. It's always an adventure. This is SMAVcast episode 26. And again, I know it's 26 because I released 25 today. So go check out SMAVcast episode 25 titled You Don't Know How to Practice, where we talk about how maybe you do, maybe you don't know how to practice. And lots of other fun stuff. It was kind of a stream of consciousness conversation. It was a lot of fun. And I think recording it, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a bit of a bear to listen to again because I felt sort of disjointed while we were talking, but then listening back to it, it sounded normal. So great. Go back, listen to that. It should be up on YouTube this week within the next day or two as well. I'm working on that tomorrow. So wherever you get your podcast served to you, you should be able to get SMAVcast episode 25. And if you haven't checked out episode 24, that was our return to the airwaves after a decent little hiatus. So here we are again. And I don't know about you, Alan, but I'm pretty stoked.
Oh, my. I'm very stoked about this.
So
this is good. Good, solid stuff.
So just I'm going to disclaimer really quickly. If I'm recording right now, and I did a little test, and I didn't hear any echo on the microphone. But if we get through an hour or two of this recording, and there's a whole bunch of echo and post haste, the end user has to listen to it. I apologize in advance. We're in a little bit of a different location tonight. I was trying to set up some video for us to watch tonight. So without too much fluff ahead of everything, if there's a little bit of an echo, I apologize. Hopefully it's not too bad to listen to while you're in the car doing nerd stuff anyway. So tonight, I want to try something. We've kind of done it before. Actually, one of the first, if not the first episode of SMAVcast, I think, and possibly the second. We watched some lightsaber footage from Star Wars media, and we're going to do something similar tonight. We're going to watch, we're going to start out with a video that kind of breaks down some of the lightsaber stuff from the Jedi Survivor video game. We're going to jump down the little Alice's little rabbit hole and kind of see where the YouTube stream takes us. But we're going to watch mostly short videos tonight, and we'll see where it goes from this first one. So, Alan, do you have anything you want to talk about before we get into that?
Yes, actually. We are going to have a full-on SMAVdown in May. So May 24th is going to be Memorial Day weekend, May 24th through May 27th. At the LAX Hilton, there's a convention there called GameX, and all of the lightsaber schools in the world are invited. I've sent messages to most people's Facebooks and emails. Haven't heard from, about 80% of them, but the ones that have heard about this have known about it for quite some time now. But we're going to basically have a Saber Mayhem. Saber Mayhem is what I'm calling it for now. Basically, there will be panels about rules and how they do their stuff. They're going to do, we're going to have a demonstration ring for those organizations. And we're also going to have a small tournament space for them as well. So if you are interested and you didn't know about it until you heard about this, please contact me. It's easy to find me, Alan Venable. I'm on Facebook. I'm on just about anywhere. Super easy to find.
If you guys are not checking out any local tournaments and things, if you're not able to travel to like what Alan's talking about, if you guys are not able to make it to Southern California, Phoenix, you know, Virginia, any of these places, at least try to check it out on YouTube. All these events, even stuff that's not SMAF oriented, or Sabre Martial Arts organization centric, there's so much stuff you can find now on YouTube, on Facebook. Everybody's streaming their stuff. Go check it out. See for yourself what all the stuff we've been talking about, all the stuff that, you know, if you have friends who are involved in this stuff, what they're talking about. So anyway, let's get into tonight's episode. I'm pretty excited. We haven't done something like this in a while. The first video I want to watch is called, let me see what it's called. Jedi Survivor, All Stance Finishers and Takedown Animations. So this is from a channel called Game Compare Central. Alan, do you have this video pulled up?
Give me 1 second. I have to pull it up on my phone, actually.
No problem.
It's not no problem. On my computer for some reason.
So if you're on YouTube, I'm on my TV with YouTube here. I just typed in Jedi Survivor lightsaber stances, mm-hmm. and I found this video. It's about three and a half minutes or so.
Yep.
Okay, so.
All right, let me know when to start. I'm good to go.
So 3, 2, 1, start. So all 16
right.
Single
saber animation.
Yep. Now these are all just finishers. This is like when you've gotten your enemy down to enough health that you can basically just do the little fatality.
Yeah. So a lot of these are pretty much really just cool looking. There's a lot of movement in them. And the character of Cal Kestis has gotten a lot grittier in this sequel.
Yes, I
than
agree.
He was in the previous one. So he's willing to lop off more limbs and just kill fire soldiers. So these 16 animations, you know, are.
Alan, we lost you there. Alan, I lost your audio.
Make you look every single direction, but the way you started.
Yep.
And we're going to lop off an arm or a leg or a head.
So one thing I noticed, obviously, it's a game mechanic, is that all of these, now we're moving into dual-bladed. That means double-bladed lightsaber or saber staff for you newbies. This is pretty, I like that spear move that he just pulled. One thing I noticed is that obviously it's a game mechanic, but they all have to be initiated off of some sort of parry or contact on contact, strike on strike in the game, some sort of timed button hit, which is very in line with like form 2, form 5 sort of combat anyway, but that's not what they're going for in the game. They're just going for, you know, when you time your button press correctly, you get to see a cool animation. So now we're on to double or dual wielding or paired lightsabers.
Right. The thing about the saber staff stuff, though, small note, is that he uses it like a normal staff, whereas a saber staff would cut through the guy. He doesn't have to hit him 8 times.
Yeah, yeah.
Although that was a really cool throw and pull back the weapons.
Uh-huh. Now we're on to cross guard. I feel like we're moving through pretty quickly. Maybe we'll watch it twice just because it's only 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I like that switch to reverse grip. That was an appropriate switch to reverse grip, in my opinion.
Yeah.
With this,
so
this cross guard saber.
A lot of negotiation here. There's just a lot of like Zweihänder kind of.
That's what I was going to say. Exactly. Yeah, like it's almost
just
like a
long blade stuff,
a very long blade, yes, montante if you will, or naginata, you know, not naginata, nodachi.
Now this is what I did most of the game.
Me
was
too.
The blaster stuff,
especially with when you're overwhelmed by numbers, it's just a lot easier to be able to hit that triangle button a few times. But I do like how it's sort of a swashbuckling style. It does look...
Well, this is their nod to Kyle Katarn, right? From all the Jedi... Was it called the Jedi Knight or Jedi Academy?
Jedi Knight, Jedi Outcast, Jedi Academy. Yep.
Yeah, Jedi Outcast.
Yep.
But yeah, they brought in the blaster stance
Let's
so that you
rewind
could see
that.
that.
Go all the way back to the top. I'll talk about it again. Sorry. Three, two, begin. I'll talk about it again, but yeah, that pistol style, I want to touch on that again when we get to it. Back to single saber
Sure.
here again. I do think there's a lot of economy of motion, which is a martially sound concept. In other words, all of his motions kind of lead into a reaction from the opponent's body. There's nothing sort of wasted. Even though a lot of the motions do seem big and flowery, they're not really wasted energy motions. They're actually very compact and martially sound.
Right. Well, there's a lot of
I like the judo
I mean,
throws
he
there.
starts off, yeah, he starts off in a normal like single-handed grip, which is his open hand in front and his saber behind him, because you know it's an idle. But most of his blocks are gonna be double-handed as he comes in and redirects in order to make contact with the enemy. And even as he climbs up that guy, right, he has the blade in front of him so that it would go into the enemy first, rather than being able to just hold him at bay. He just keeps the blade between him and the enemy. So, and again, with the dual bladed, he wouldn't hit this guy over and over again like that, even though it looks cool. It would just be one and he's done, but
That's
again,
really any
it's
lightsaber, but for the mechanics,
yeah.
that was cool though, how he sent it out and then arms and body and head, and it all just kind of got cut
Yeah.
up into several ways. We're on to dual wield
Right.
again. I like that they
Right.
gave him a Shoto or a short lightsaber in addition to his long saber. One of
Right.
my issues with Force Unleashed was just the two long sabers. That's kind of my issue anytime you see. The only person I really
Right.
give a pass to on that is Asajj Ventress, because she's so badass.
Right.
On to
But
Crossguard
she's not bad.
again.
She's just drawn that way.
I do like the way they animated the cross guard. It's not like a Kylo Ren thing where you're going to cut your own thumbs
Right.
off. They gave you a base of the
Yeah.
emitter, and then the cross guard is emitted on top of that. That was very interesting to me.
Right. Well, actually, as you play the game too, you can feel the difference
I
when you
agree.
hit somebody with a cross guard rather than just the normal saber. It has a lot more weight, and even the sound design sounds like it's a ton of weight hitting. Like even his little sweep there that would have cut off the guy's leg instead would be different, right? And then it's very cool, and it looks like whoever did the mocap for this had a lot of fun
I agree with that.
with the design. But it's also, again, are you paying attention to all of that while you're playing the game? Probably not, because you're usually surrounded in this game by more than one guy. But there's cool stuff like that little cross of the arms and shoot him with a blaster. Cool stuff.
So I'm
Cool
just
stuff like
gonna
shooting him behind.
pause the video and we'll just hang out here for a second. So I wanna talk about this blaster stance for a second because how un-Jedi like for him to have a blaster, right? Like everything we've usually heard about, aside from in video games, obviously, where you get like nine blasters and somehow they all fit in your pocket and you get every lightsaber style. But in this video game, you get the blaster. And the blaster almost does behave sort of like, I don't want to say a musket, but like you've got a limited supply of ammunition. You have to hit people with your lightsaber in order to get ammunition back, which I thought at first was like a cheap mechanic, but then I was like, oh no, this is actually kind of cool because if you really were, let's just say in the real world, like an application for this style might be a navy or a pirate boarding party. You get onto the ship. You've got your sword as your main source of self-defense and offense, but your pistol and the way he uses it in this, is a melee weapon as much as it is a ranged weapon. And particularly with like a musket, you would only have one shot. You couldn't reload in the middle of your sword fight. So you were using the pistol as a melee weapon, as a defensive tool. Like you said, crossing the arms, using the sword as your main source of offense and defense, but allowing the pistol and just the actual physical pistol, not just the ability to shoot. But then like you move ahead in history, in Earth history, towards like cavalry warfare, when you would have maybe six shots. And that's a lot closer to what the game is. I think in the game, like I think right now, you know, I have like seven or nine shots on the pistol or something like that. That in and of itself is very like close to history, where you would have a saber, R-E, not E-R, and maybe a revolver, and you might be on top of a horse, or you might dismount and have to engage the enemy with mainly your sword, because there's a lot more than six dudes in front of you and you've only got six shots, or whatever the case is. So I just found that to be incredibly, not just accurate, but the way that they actually addressed the physicality to me was so martially sound, with some of the like historical spadroon or cutlass or things like that that you would see. Because a lot of times they would talk about the use of your sidearm as well as the sword. So I just found that to be very interesting that they incorporated it that way in the game.
Yeah, somebody's doing their homework, right? Really good job. Yeah, somebody did a really good job of going, oh, well, what if we did this?
So let's go back in time here. Before the pistol was the crossguard. We talked a little bit about it. We said the words Zweihänder and Montante. We also said the word Nodachi. So let's just talk a little bit about kind of the crossguard inspiration that we see here. Definitely, if you don't know what we're talking about by these words, these would be long swords. Zweihänder meaning two-hander, Montante, Nodachi, big-ass sword, right? It's a big-ass sword. And a lot of times these swords would be used to defend a large area in front of you, keep a large number of enemies at bay in front of you in a wide arcing area, or even maybe in tight quarters, keeping the point in front of you almost like a spear, using it to cover your body as a shield. And then, of course, from horseback, like strapping or bracing the handle against your abdomen and allowing that blade to just be carried by the horse across swaths of enemy soldiers. Now, there's no horseback, but there actually is. You can ride like a little bird thing. What is that thing called again? I love those things. Anyway, you can ride on them, but you don't use the crossguard saber on the back of it. But in the game, that's exactly the way the crossguard saber kind of works. It's big motions, big sweeping. Yeah. They take a long time, but if anything is in the way, it's like a buzzsaw.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of neat. It seems like they give the crossguard, like the energy of the lightsaber blade, more power, because it it can cut even like powerful enemies down with a cut or two. So I think it's very interesting in the way that they incorporate. Plus, they put a little bit of that High Republic lore in. That was very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we're not giving too many spoilers if you haven't played the game. You know, but it's been out for half a year, almost a year. So I think we can.
Years now, isn't it?
Has it been already? I don't know. I just got my PS5 this Christmas, so I'm catching up on everything. Great. You, for all I know, you're right. So anyway, crossguard was before that. Before that, we had what was it? Crossguard. It was dual wielding or Jarkai. So we mentioned they have the Shoto or the short saber. Again, that kind of fits along with like Rapier and Dagger, although the motions were not very Rapier and Dagger like, almost more Eskrima like.
Yeah.
And I guess sometimes, like, you can look back, and if we're looking at European stuff, because in the other video I sent you, which we'll talk about, he mentions a couple of European fencing masters who taught dual rapier, and some of the motions that he was showing fit very well with the motions that I saw in the game. Now, what I saw in the game fit a lot more with Eskrima than what he was sort of explaining, in my, but this is my opinion. He could very well be right, and the person who did the mocap or the person who did the animation really was more inspired by the case of rapiers, so to speak. But give me something about this. I think it's interesting. I think you can look at it from all sorts of ways, because two weapons, that comes up in all sorts of martial styles from all over the world.
Absolutely. So there is something to be said about this type of combat. If you think about it too much, you'll go cross-eyed. It's, remember that this is for a video game, it's mocap, and conditions are perfect. You have to actually, all you're doing is hitting a button with your thumb. If you were actually to practice and do some of the motions, they would work if you had previous training. You'd actually have to, a lot of the single saber stuff where he blocks and redirects and stuff, you have to actually practice that with somebody that's fighting against you, so you can feel where you actually have to be, what your angle has to be. It's not just gonna happen on accident. It does still take time, effort, energy, and practice to get it right. A lot of the also a lot of the stuff that you're seeing there is also not applicable in any sort of point sparring. There's a couple of movements that you might be able to get over, but really only the cross guard stuff where he hits them and they're staggered does it actually show up.
Well, a lot of times you're not going to be able to do like where he pushes them back with the force of his strike. That's not going to happen. Or where he goes underneath of an arm, uses a little judo throw or something like that. That's not going to happen. Now, could it in, if you were sort of, I know in a lot of HEMA tournaments or in, any sword fighting, sometimes they have a grappling component where you're allowed to do takedowns or clinching type grappling and stuff. But yeah, nine times out of 10 in a saber tournament, it's going to be way too fast action anyway.
Right. Here's what I'll say about that is those types of tournaments where you can drop your weapons and punch each other usually are have steel gauntlets and steel helmets.
Well, there's a whole lot of stuff involved beyond just, I want to play with lightsabers.
And it's not going to be, generally speaking, and I can't speak for every single lightsaber organization out there, most lightsaber organizations disallow grappling. So not a lot of that is viable. Like if you're touching your opponent with something other than your blade, then it's usually a penalty.
Now, I will caveat this. When I was teaching a lot of lightsaber and just weapons in general, but lightsaber, when we were using foam weapons in particular, I would definitely allow grappling, but also these were empty hand martial arts students as well. Like, you couldn't take the weapons class unless you were already in a class that was sparring with empty hands on a daily basis. So you already had a high level of control. You already knew how to grapple. You already knew how to do takedowns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly. So if you're not doing that already as part of, most lightsaber organizations are not doing that. But if you are in a martial arts school or something like that, like let's say your saber group practices at a martial mm-hmm. arts school, it would behoove you to maybe take some classes where that is involved, because you never know. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway,
right.
But you're right. 9 times out of 10, 9.5 times out of 10, you can't do that stuff in saber combat.
Right. Right. So it's cool and it's awesome to be able to do it. And it is definitely a skill.
Sure.
If you are allowed to do that with, other types of weapons, foam with, partners that
on a padded floor with gloves and a mouth guard. Yeah.
Yeah. To be able to, even the one where he makes a guy double over, does a little barrel roll over his back in order to hit him. I mean, that was really cool, but is it practical? No.
No. And would engage in grappling, I'm thinking back on it now, mm-hmm. like a lot of the time it's controlling the weapon arm, maybe doing mm-hmm. some sort of trip or sweep to take mm-hmm. the person down, but you're really not mm-hmm. able to engage in, like, because think about it, especially if they have two weapons, like you might mm-hmm. be getting stabbed in the back with the dagger while you're trying to go in for a judo hip throw. But if you're just, controlling the weapon arm, maybe striking with the other hand, maybe there's a trip, that's a lot different than sort of what you see in this game here. And like you said, it's a video game. It's supposed to be fun. But it's definitely based on real martial art. Definitely based on real martial arts. It's not dude in a mocap suit swinging a baseball bat.
Yeah, there are elements of wushu and I hate to say it, there's a lucha libre in there.
Yeah.
there's some really good swordsmanship too.
Yeah,
because you have to know what you're doing in order to choreograph that particular.
Well, I'm watching set. The double bladed again. In particular, mm-hmm. this is a tough weapon to use, because it's really tempting to touch yourself with the blade. And I'm watching these animations again. Whoever's mm-hmm. using this double bladed lightsaber has not let mm-hmm. either of the blades touch his own body once.
Right.
That's really impressive. And it looks like the character Cal is concerned about that. It looks like he's right. practiced not hitting himself with either of those blades, which people who use double bladed sabers in tournaments hit themselves all the time with those things. And it's really a lot less like using, I think you've talked about this before, but it's a lot more like using a sword with a spike on the end, or using a spear with a spike on the end, than it is like using two blades.
Right.
You have like a primary and a secondary still. And you might change grips and then it changes your primary and secondary, or you might do a spin and that would, adjust your primary, secondary over time. But really, 9 times out of 10, you're striking with one end or the other primarily. So it's still just Correct. Using a sword.
Right.
And it seems like whoever did this understood that about it, which, a lot of times you see like Darth Maul in a video game or something. It's just like, you don't even know what that lightsaber is doing, but it should have right. cut his legs in 20 different places.
Exactly.
So I think overall, I think we probably moved past this video, but this was a fun little kind of a way to whet our appetite for the rest of mm-hmm. for the rest of the recording. I think before we watch anything else, I think it's really important for a video game, because visual media, this is how like people learn things now. It's almost disgusting, mm-hmm. but like YouTube and video games, that's how people learn everything.
Right.
And if you're going to do a video game like this, it's kind of cool how they show that the guy is good at martial arts, but you can also see like he hasn't had a real teacher in a while.
Right.
He's making up a lot of it according to just how he is naturally. Like you said, the opening stance, just that sort of arrogant sword behind him, hands open.
Mm-hmm.
But then he still goes right. back to good technique, two hands on the blade when he needs it, one hand, other hand covering. It's just, I think the narrative for the story, it works, but also, you know, being a martial arts nerd, it's nice to see yourself represented well in a video game. I say yourself, right. I've taken ownership of it, but
yeah, it's done really well. Like the way that they've put enough or just enough into it to be like, no, this is a guy that over time, over the past, I believe it's like 5 years in the between the games, he's become a little bit meaner in what he does. He's becoming a little bit more efficient in taking people out, and actually just a tiny little bit of that dark side is coming out when he does all these finishers, right? So everything he's doing doesn't really quickly dispatch the guys. He actually hurts them before he ends them.
Right.
So there is something to be said about just the thought of, okay, well, this guy has been on his own for a while. He's actually, you know, he's actually kind of broken. So he's going to take out his frustrations and his anger out in little ways. And spoilers for the game, you know, you actually kind of see that, you know, that version of a fallen Jedi in some of the characters, and kind of seeing where somebody that is such a bastion for good could actually, you know, through circumstance and situation, just really go bad.
Yeah. Well, and here's a little spoiler alert, very small, that mm-hmm. you do get to kind of see that played out a little bit in the game.
Yeah.
And
Dagon Guerra is a really good antagonist.
Yeah.
Let's say
it. I thought this game was, now let's just talk Star Wars nerdiness for a few minutes here. Mm-hmm. Just as a video mm-hmm. game, as a Star Wars video game, I thought this was superb. I was admittedly disappointed by Jedi Outcast. Now, that was on the first playthrough. The second playthrough, I enjoyed it a lot more. I sort of forgave some of the things that I had issues with in the first place. But
talking about Fallen Order?
I'm sorry. Yes, Fallen Order. Jedi Outcast is an older game.
Okay, there we go.
Yes, which is a fun game, but...
yeah, I was like, wait, no. Hold on.
no, Fallen Order. And I really enjoyed the story of Fallen Order a lot more than mm-hmm. the actual gameplay. I mean, it was fun, but just right. the story was a lot, and the environments were very immersive. I thought it was mm-hmm. really fun to kind of climb all over all these vast, and that's the same thing in Jedi Survivor. So mm-hmm. I just thought it took everything that was already good and it fixed all the stuff that I was already frustrated with. So right. I thought that was very cool. But the story was also a lot thicker in this one.
Yeah.
Sure. And so not to mention, I mean, it's cool as hell to be able to customize your saber and your outfit and everything to the extent that they let you.
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was neat to also see, because in the first one, the martial arts were okay, but this yeah. one, it seemed like they really, it was like a big part of the conversation when they were making the game.
Right.
So for me, it's like, I mean, we play a video game so we can watch, like the Assassin's Creed games, that they all have cool finishers and great weapon styles mm-hmm. and stuff. Like, that's why we play those type of video games. We want to see cool stuff.
Right.
But it's also nice when it's
and the accurate. Guys that do the mocap, the guys that do the mocap are actually really talented.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Artists. And it, they teach, like, Cameron Monaghan, I think his name is, the guy who plays Cal. He's had to learn quite a bit about how to not look like an idiot with a sword in your hand. Right. I don't know how much martial arts training he had before or since, but it's clear that he's not incompetent when you see some of the footage of it and so forth. So
right.
We've watched this video before, but not this way. So I'm going to type in Maul and Ahsoka. We're going to watch their duel from the end of Clone Wars.
Okay.
But
so just the season 7.
Mm-hmm. But I want to see if we can find... Here it is. We're going to watch it the side-by-side that they do with Ray Park and Lauren Mary Kim. Sure. With the mocap. Yeah. So let me, right. I think this is the video.
From Joe Blow, streaming and TV.
Let me see. I just have to go through the ad. Yes. Yes. So this is called Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Official featurette, Maul versus Ahsoka. So we're going to start. It's 4 minutes. There's some talking and stuff. We're not going to worry about that. Let me see. It go up to... where it says 1:33, Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. You see that?
Yep. Sound rehearsals.
So 1, 2, 3, play. So this is going to, I think at some point they're going to get in. Here we go. They're getting into the mocap. They're just kind of reintroducing Ray Park. So he, I mean, there would be no double bladed saber without him showing it off. Obviously it showed up in the comics for anybody who knows the deep cuts before this with Exar Kun, but it was a different style of saber. It wasn't a long hilt. It was a short hilt. It was a one-handed weapon, and it was very impractical in the comic book, the way that it was presented. This, and they're going through, if you're not watching this, you know, we'll give you the title again and I'll post a link, but you can see like, the way that he addresses it, he's got a black weapon, all black, all the way down. He can't see where his blades would be, but the way he addresses his hand position on the quote unquote hilt is super. I mean, he invented this style of combat basically, using a sword with two blades like that. It wasn't a real historical weapon that I'm aware of. And if it was, it was a ceremonial thing. It wasn't like for real combat.
Right. It was, there is a Japanese weapon like it, but it's more of a slashing weapon.
I believe there's an Indian weapon like it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like a dual blade. I mean, I guess
you could say you could use like a javelin or a short spear like it, but it's not like the double bladed saber is like the best and the worst weapon, right? Visually, right. Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Actually winning a fight with it, horrible.
Sure.
Basically,
for choreography, it's one of the best because
absolutely
you can really slow things down and sort of and I would argue that might really increase your capabilities with a single blade just because you're keeping track of all that lethality. But yeah, to your point, it's super impractical and not easy to actually win with. Nobody is actually Darth Maul with that thing.
Right. And if they are, teach us.
Well, you can tell he's had so much training with an actual staff. I mean, this guy, his waxwood staff, we've seen videos of maybe that's something we'll look at is some of his bow forms. Anyway, you were talking. I'm sorry, but I jumped in.
No worries. It's one of those things where when you watch stuff like this, right, it looks really cool. But again, how practical is it? Not very.
Yeah.
You know, is it that something you could pull off? Yes, definitely. You can definitely pull this off. However, it's not something that just anybody can do, right?
Right.
So
right.
Ray Park, legendary, you know, choreography and amazing athlete. You know, he's basically elevated every single character he has inhibited because of his athleticism, right? Like Toad in the X-Men movies did not do as much as Toad did until the director was like, oh, you can do that too? Holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, Snake Eyes in the G.I. Joe movies, right? And it, like everything that Ray Park has touched with his ability in choreography and in like all that stuff, like other people have tried to break down, you know, his fights and stuff on YouTube and on other places, and they have nothing but praise for Ray Park, because they're like, well, yeah, you can break that down all you want, but notice that every single time Maul turns his back, there is a blade between his back and the other opponent. Every time you watch that, look at it again. Like, it's all Ray, you know, getting in there and going, okay, check this out. We're going to look good if I do this, and then you have to just do this. And then we'll leave it to the editor to make it all go in. And just like, again, these two fights that we see, you know, Ray Park move as Maul, the one from the Phantom Menace and the one from, you know, the mocap from the Clone Wars, you look at it and it's 20 years apart.
Oh, and it's, he was 21 when he did it in the Phantom Menace. It's incredible when you think about that. Because I think about how I moved 20 years ago. It is way different.
it's he doesn't really look cool like
he
moves too.
And he's already been through knee surgeries. He's had all kinds of stuff. I mean, incredible. And actually, let's show Ray Park 30 years ago. So, first of all, before we do that, Lauren Mary Kim with Ahsoka's motion capture, we would be remiss not to just mention how absolutely spot on her her Jarkai application is.
Absolutely amazing.
Really.
I mean, there's a point in that fight where she does a spin on her knees.
Yes.
In order to stand up. And I was like, 20 years ago, that would have been a cool idea for me, but I'm never going to do that anymore. You know?
Well, and I mean this as a compliment to her. She's a lot younger than Ray Park, and she sort of looks like she's almost trying to keep up with him. And that sounds like an insult. That's a compliment. Like the fact that she is keeping up with him, because he's like Jackie Chan. He's like the white Jackie Chan. Like, you're just not going to keep up with him.
It takes a lot to have to do some of that stuff. I mean, Ray Park is one of those guys that when you meet him at Comic Cons and stuff, he'll get up and he'll like hop over the table. He'll do like a butterfly.
He's got
kick
more energy
like, right, you got
than
yeah.
anybody I know.
Right.
Especially, you know, I don't know what he's on. Probably got to be around 50 now. That's crazy. So anyway, let's watch Ray Park. The video is called Wushu Ray Park doing Chang Quan on the 93 Wushu Worlds. I'm sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly. The channel is Marco Reike, R-E-I-C-K-E. I typed in Ray Park Wushu, and this is one of the first videos that came up.
Okay, hold on. You said Ray Park Wushu?
Yeah, type in Ray Park Wushu, and it says Ray Park doing Chang Quan on the 93 Wushu Worlds. And it's a minute and 48 seconds.
I'm trying to bring it up on my on my Xbox here. Wushu. Okay, I see it. Doing Chang Quan.
Chang Quan. There you go.
Chang Quan. Yeah, okay. So this is Long Fist, Northern Shaolin Long Fist. So he's basically doing exactly as advertised, explosive movement, long reaching attacks and kicks is Shang Shuan.
And this would have been six years before the fans, just a few years before he would have started work on the Phantom Menace. But it's pretty incredible. So we'll hit play here in 3, 2, 1, play. And I think one of the first things people will immediately recognize is this is Darth Maul. As soon as he starts moving, you're going to be like, oh, okay. That's why this is why he was chosen.
Right. Well, it's interesting because like when you watch this open hand movement and the fact that
look how precise.
This is a teenager, right?
Yeah.
Going through and doing this, it just goes to show like there is
a level of commitment.
level of commitment and level of athleticism that needs to happen in order to land
Ooh.
in the splits, you know, to be able to slide into that, be able to drop down and sweep in. That movement is called swallow skims the water. But be able to do all this, and you can tell with the crispness of his stances where he's not moving,
Yes, I was just gonna say that, Alan.
is the fact that he's actually done this a lot. This
Well,
isn't something that he
16, we
did
talked
like.
last week. If you start martial arts at this age, you're this many years out, but only this many years in. This is a guy who started at a young age. He was in the circus. He did martial arts. I mean, this guy. This, like we said, it's a level of dedication, but it's a level beyond. But it's also something like, just because you didn't do it, let's watch that again. Just because you didn't do it the same way or from the same age, you can take a lot of inspiration from that level of, because you said the stances where he's not moving, those little moments in between the big athletic spinny, flippy, butterfly twists and jumping and splitting. The moments in between, you can tell they're just as important, if not more important, to be crisp, clean, sharp, and precise. And that's what really impresses me as a martial arts teacher, but also just a fan of martial arts, is like, man, every stance is perfect. His hands just perfectly sharp. The way his wrists snap and the way his elbows come in and out. It's like, oh my God, you could just, oh, I could just melt in a sea of that all day. So let's go back. We'll watch it one more time. Three, two, one, play. And this time around, if you're watching along with us, just pay attention to that. It's a maturity. That's what it is. Like we said, a teenager, it's a maturity that you can take inspiration from. A maturity in the way that you practice and train that is very evident in performance. You could tell this guy doesn't practice half-ass. He practices like everybody's watching all the time.
Yeah, there is a crispness to wushu, especially in competition, that has to happen. There has to be a snap,
Yeah.
as we like to call it. And you know, karate and karate, judo, all of these wonderful other martial arts have a snap in their katas. Like for
Correct.
karate and judo, you'll hear it like when they punch and they kick, their
The
gi makes the
uniform
sound for
snaps.
them.
Correct.
But in Chinese kung fu, you're wearing silk, so it doesn't actually snap as loud. It doesn't have that
But you
kind
can
of
hear it still, like their body's made of rubber bands.
exactly. So when you're actually looking at this and watching him pop, even for that less than a second that he's in a low stance,
Right.
or even when he's in a high like crane stance when one leg is up, there is a line from his head to his heel. There is a line from one hand to the other where it's like
Yeah.
perfect symmetry.
Yeah.
And that means that that guy's probably held that stance for a while, and he's gotten to the point where his body knows this is where you stop, this is where you load your hip, this is where
Yeah.
all of this happens. So when you're looking at a lot of these martial artists that on YouTube especially, pay attention not to just what they do when they're moving, but I mean, look at some of these thumbnails on YouTube and how awesome their stances are.
Yeah.
That tells you more about the will and preciseness of a martial artist is their stance. Like my teachers would just watch somebody do their salute and know whether or not the rest of the form was any good.
Yeah.
You know, that's how how important it was, because if the salute is the first thing you learn, and if your salute looks like trash, the rest of your form will.
Well, I think just it's really evident when you watch, like, in the video we just watched, especially like head snaps. That's something when you take a traditional martial arts class, if you learn kata or anything like that, snapping your head in the correct direction of the opponent before you do anything else is, at least in my training, has been a huge thing. And so much so that I've seen people fail that portion of the test just based on the fact that their head wasn't doing the right thing. Because you see it in that video, like, when your head snaps to the right place first, like, it almost, you almost don't need to throw a punch in that direction. Like, yeah. So anyway, I'm trying to find a video with the guy we were talking about, Dave Rawlings, here. So there's a guy named Dave Rawlings, and he is pretty much as close to a HEMA master as we might have these days. He's been doing it a very, very long time, longer than most people. Part of that is age, but also, I mean, when training in the historical manuscripts and such really started to gain momentum, I mean, it's still not like, it's still a closet activity for a lot of people. And not super mainstream. So for somebody been doing it as long as a guy like Dave Rawlings has been doing it, that's somebody that you can start to look at and go, okay, this guy's been steeped in it long enough that what he's talking about is probably not BS. And so what I would say, because I'm having a little trouble kind of locating a video that would really demonstrate what we're talking about, but if you look up Dave Rawlings, Dave, obviously, Rawlings, and then the name of the sword would be either Zweihander, Zweihander, or the one that he's more famous for is Montante, which is just the Italian word for the same type of sword, a very long two-handed sword, Montante. So if you go onto YouTube, I'm just talking to anybody listening, and you look this up, Dave Rawlings Montante or Dave Rawlings Zweihander, you will find a lot of really cool stuff that will match very close to what you saw in that Jedi Survivor clip. And it'll give you a nice, if it's something that you're interested in, maybe you're actually a saber trainee and you really want to get into more of the cross guard or longer saber, great saber type of stuff. I would say this is maybe the first and only place you should look for a while. You know, I hesitate to say
he only. Does, in case anybody is looking, London Longsword Academy.
Thank you. Thank you. I couldn't remember the name of his and so the video I sent you earlier is called Swordmaster Reacts to Star Wars Jedi Survivors Combat.
Right.
And it's by GameSpot is the channel. But if you type in Dave Rawlings Montante, it's actually one of the first ones that comes up for that as well. And he's been on like IGN and Insider and some of these other things doing these reaction type videos. But London Longsword Academy has a very good YouTube channel. He's not full of crap. He's very personable on video. And it seems to me like he's the kind of guy that really likes to share. So I've gotten a lot of information from him over the years, just watching his videos, but also he explains things in a way where he's not like protecting the information from the public. It seems like, go home, try this. I'm showing you because I want you to go home and try it. You might not have a great giant longsword at home, but go grab a staff and do the same thing that I'm doing. So I think that that's cool. Anytime you have somebody who's willing to sort of address you like that as a viewer, I think it's worth looking at him a little bit more closely. But I'm looking here on his channel, lots of good instructionals, Katana versus rapier. He's got, you know, reply videos to other sword nerds and stuff, but there's sparring mm-hmm. videos. You can see he does rapier work as well. So anyway, he's not paying me to give him this shout out. Maybe one day we'll be lucky enough. We'll be able to have him on the podcast. I'm sure he'd be interested. He's a big Star Wars fan as well. But I encourage you, since we were talking about the cross guard and maybe some of the great sword techniques, I encourage you to check out Dave Rawlings if you're interested in that style of swordplay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Alan, do you have anything you wanna look at? I don't know, I'm putting you on the spot. I have the power of Disney magic. I can always edit out dead time, but
I'm curious. Well, I feel like what we should do is put our money where our mouth is and actually put ourselves out there. On one of these podcasts, we've broken down what other people have done. I feel like next time we meet, we should look at some of the stuff that we've done and we do and continue to do and teach and kind of roast ourselves. I think that would be a good way to kind of start to look at, okay, well, this is an example of, you know, Phoenix Saber Academy Sheet Show. This is an example of, you know, San Diego Sabres version of Makashi. This is a version of, you know, insert SMAF school here, you know, because I know that we all have videos, and those of you in SMAF that are listening to this, send us your videos.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We will roast them.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's we'll just leave that as a standing offer. Anytime you guys send us training videos, or, you know, Courtney, if you have some of your training stuff, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be that we make it available for everybody who's listening, but to maybe we'll at least put it up on the screen so that people, because, you know, I understand some stuff people might not want their academic licensing sort of nibbled at, but at the same time, I think we have enough footage where it won't be an issue. So,
oh yeah, you know what you could do if you don't want to
share too much of your curriculum. School, yeah,
yeah, is you could just pick certain point exchanges from events that you've done and break that down.
Ooh, I really like that. That's actually, I don't want to say a better idea, but that's. Any and all of the above, please. It would be great. Mm-hmm. And if you're just a listener, maybe you do HEMA somewhere, because I know we've got listeners in Europe. I know we've got listeners all over the U.S. Maybe you do a different style of maybe you don't do saber fighting. Maybe you do kendo or something, eskrima. I would love to see some of your sparring or some of your tournament footage or something. And we'll absolutely give you credit. We'll make sure you don't look like a dunce. Thank you for sharing. It would behoove us not to make you look like a dunce, especially, like, let's say you lose the match, but you're really proud of the way you fought. Obviously, we're going to make sure that we highlight the fact that you fought well. So please, we're interested in sharing for sharing's sake and for fun and knowledge. And yes, roasting, but You know us. We're not too hurtful. We're tongue in cheek, and we're just as harsh on ourselves, if not worse, than we are on anybody else. Yes, I think next week I'm gonna start digging this week here, and by next week I'll have some videos of my own. I said in last week's episode that I got over watching myself on video. We'll see if that's true.
All right.
And yeah, that'll be cool. Where are we right now? We're just about an hour. I guess we can kind of start wrapping up, but Alan, I want to nerd out a little bit. What do you think about the way that like lightsabers in video games through time? Let's just nibble on this for a minute. What is your earliest memory of using a lightsaber in a video game and being like, oh, that was so cool? Because truthfully, a lot of it was trash. But for years and years, we survived on trash like it was gold.
Right. let's see, my very first lightsaber in a video game. Like, when did I?
Like, what was the moment? I can remember mine, but what was the moment where you were like, oh yeah, you used a lightsaber in a video game, and you were like, oh, this feels like I'm a Jedi.
You know, that's a good question, because there's been a lot of lightsabers in video games, and I believe the first one I can remember was like Super Star Wars, I think it was called. It
oh
was
my
like on
gosh,
the
yes, yes.
The
On the
SNES.
SNES, yes, Super
And
Star Wars.
It was not a good game.
No.
But I had a lightsaber, and it made it automatically 400 times cooler.
Man, you had to get through really hard gameplay to even get to the lightsaber, though.
Right. That was the first time. And because, you know, I got the lightsaber at that point, I was like, yep, I earned it.
Yeah, that's true.
But there has been I think we've invoked Kyle Katarn a couple times.
Yeah, the Dark Forces
and
series.
That was the Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy, Jedi Outcast, I want to say.
Those were the three games.
Is that all three of them?
I know he was also games, in Dark Forces. The original game was just called Dark Forces, but that did not have lightsaber combat in it. It was a first-person shooter. And then Jedi Outcast was technically called Dark Forces 2. And then they did a Mara Jade expansion pack, Secrets of the Empire, something like that.
Sure.
She was the character, but it was the same gameplay. Then they did Jedi Knight was the second one. Jedi Outcast was the third one. And that was very lightsaber combat, force powers. Mm-hmm. It started to get a lot, the lightsaber combat started to get a lot cooler, but it was still crap. Like, yeah, looking back on it now, it's still crap. Jedi Academy was the last one in that series.
Yeah. So I think after that was like, let's see. I know I played Shadows of the Empire, but you didn't get a lightsaber in that. All you got was a blaster.
Correct.
And a jetpack.
Correct.
Because that was good old Dash Rendar.
Dash Rendar.
Yeah. I think I missed like a solid 10 years of video games, because I think that's when all the Force Unleashed stuff came out.
Mm.
I mean, I played that after the fact, once it got, you know, remastered and put on the Xbox network, I think is when I played
When I
that,
first played those games, I was so into it, but man, looking back, like I'm surprised I didn't get seizures from the lightsaber combat in those games.
Right. And then the old Republic games were in that 10 years. I didn't play video games.
I didn't play the Old Republic, but I did play KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic.
Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
Knights of the Old Republic 2. I didn't experience the, I mean, the cinematics were amazing, but I didn't get any lightsaber gameplay from those.
Well, I was going to say the first time when I remember, like, the lightsaber making an impact on me in a game was, you remember the Star Wars arcade cabinet, where you sat on the seat and there was a big joystick and there was a huge TV in front of you. It's called Star Wars Arcade, and it came out in the 90s.
I don't remember that. No.
Oh man, it was an incredible game, because you went through the original trilogy, and you got to choose which, like, you know, in true arcade game style, you put in your whole allowance for the week and you get like two tries. But you you started, like, if you started on A New Hope, you would, if I remember correctly, like, you had to fly your X-Wing, then, like, you would fight Darth Maul, or not Darth Maul, Darth Vader. And so I remember this lightsaber, like, your joystick was the lightsaber, and on the screen in front of you, like, coming up from the top button on the joystick, you could see, like, the blade tracking your hand motions. And really all you could do was move it left, right, back, and forward. But it was everything. I spent so many quarters, like, probably hundreds of dollars on that stupid game, just to where I could fly an actual speeder bike through Endor or actually fight Darth Vader with, you know, Luke's green lightsaber on this, you know, 45-inch TV in front of me, which was huge right. at the time. And so that was the first time that, like, I just remember being like, oh my God, I wish there would be like, they would make like a lightsaber I could duel with, you know, little did I know right. 15 years later, that we'd be doing this, but
yeah, but that was also one of the first times there was ever a first person lightsaber, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Cause all the other games I've talked about are like third person lightsabers.
And that's what I was going to say. The next time that even, like, Jedi Outcast, it didn't really do it for me. Jedi Academy, it didn't really do it for me, the lightsaber combat. The way there was a game on the PlayStation 1. You've heard me and Bede talk about it on Starbucks back in the day. But it's a game called Jedi Power Battles. And this game is notoriously crapped on by pop culture because it's sort of a little-known game. But if you have played it before, it is incredibly difficult on your first playthrough. Incredibly difficult. Excuse me. But the combos and the button mashing.
Why is Obi-Wan and Mace Windu on the cover?
So this is a great game. This game is so great. It came out sort of around the same time as that Phantom Menace game on the PlayStation that was sort of like an RPG. But this was like strictly third person action. It was like a dungeon crawler almost, a platformer.
Yeah, it was based on the Phantom Menace. I'm just like,
yeah. But it was sort of like Phantom Menace adjacent. So like, yeah, you had Plo Koon and Addy Gallia just like going on this adventure with the crew.
Right.
But it was one of the first times where the Jedi.
Oh, Plo Koon had his yellow saber.
Yes, yes. One of the first times where the Jedi had very different fighting styles. Each one has a very different fighting style and actually sort of matched up with what they came out with in the canon for the lightsaber forms following this.
I just want to say, I'm looking at the back of the box here. Deflect, defeat, destroy.
Oh,
that's what the Jedi do, right?
And this was the first time where the L1 button was your deflection button and every video game since L1 is deflection. This was the first time where they had timed deflection, where if you held the button, you would just send the blaster bolt wherever. But if you timed it, you would deflect it right back at them. This game was way ahead of its time. And because of that, I think nobody was really ready for it. I'm an apologist for this game. You will never get me to say a bad word about this game, except that it is so incredibly difficult the first time you play it. And if you're playing two-player, because Bede and I tried to do an entire playthrough on Starbucks before COVID sort of put a monkey wrench in that for us. But, man, trying to play it two-player, the camera is just...
So is this the first time we see Plo Koon?
Yes. In a video game, yes.
Okay.
I think ever. actually, he's in The Phantom Menace, but this came out, I believe, before the movie actually was released. So, yes.
Okay.
Plo Koon, Addy Gallia, first time we see her. And then she comes back in Jedi Starfighter on PlayStation 2. And actually, her style of fighting in that, in the cutscenes and things, is almost identical to the way it is in this game. First time you see a reverse grip lightsaber, she uses a reverse grip in this game. And she actually uses it correctly, which is really funny because you're working with 32-bit animation. There's no reason it should be like all of the quote-unquote martial arts in this game are super tight for like this crap ass animation.
This went out to Game Boy Color.
Yeah, so that one's that's a different bear. and it actually got re-released on
PS1, Dreamcast, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, so it got re-released on Dreamcast with some updated graphics and they added Ki-Adi Mundi to the mix.
Oh, that's cool.
But later on in the game, you can unlock Darth Maul, which is cool because it's single saber Darth Maul.
Interesting.
You can unlock Captain Panaka and Queen Amidala, who fight with blasters and punches, which is also pretty cool.
Nice.
And I believe you can unlock like a droidica and like Jar Jar Binks or something. It's really quite ridiculous. But that game, I would honestly say I owe a lot of my serious training in saber combat to this ridiculously difficult old ass PlayStation game.
You know what that reminded me of is the when I started thinking of Star Wars as not just a universe where all sorts of crazy stuff could happen, but as a place where, like, yeah, that would make sense that there would be martial arts in it.
Right.
As well as just lightsabers and stuff. Lightsabers and blasters, yes. But also, what if you didn't have a lightsaber or a blaster? Was that game that we've talked about before, Masters of Terras Kasi.
Oh, my gosh. Damn, you're bringing up all the hits that everybody else hated. Oh, but I love that game. Oh, I'm so bad at it, but I love it.
That game was, let's face it, that was not a good game, but it
captured, it was terrible.
My imagination.
What was it? It was sort of like a Tekken knockoff, right? But
yeah,
it was a really watered down version of Tekken.
Yeah, it was in the day where Street Fighter II had just come out, like in a couple of years later, Masters of Terror.
Yeah, it came out in 94, 95, something like that. It was one of the first, right, like within the first year of the PlayStation being out.
Right, but it was one of those things where it's like, oh, fighting games are cool. Hey, look, we have the Star Wars license. Let's make a fighting game out of Star Wars. And then they wrote like I believe the story was exactly like Game of Death. Sorry, what is it? Bruce Lee's movie, famous one. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Bruce Lee's famous movie. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. But the
Enter the Dragon.
Basically, yes, it was basically Star Wars, Mr. Han, bringing everybody to I forget the name of the planet, but where he's like, I have gathered all the best martial artists from all across the galaxy, you know. And I was like, geez. Okay, well, that's fine. It's fine. I mean, Mortal Kombat did it too. Whatever. And
Alan? Well, keep talking. I have another video we're going to try and watch. Keep talking.
Okay. But yeah, the Masters of Terras Kasi just made you go, okay, I don't see Han doing that ever. You know, he's not going to shoot you and then run up and punch you. But the other thing is they try to keep it in canon,
right?
They made it so that I'm pretty sure that it was just before Return of the Jedi, and it may have been just before Shadows of the Empire or something like that. But they it couldn't have been because Han was in it. So I'm not sure exactly what the timeline was there, because it was a weird, like, okay, Han is shooting and then he's doing basically a dragon punch. So Masters of Terras Kasi is one of them. But the cool thing is in the movie Solo, what's her name?
Kira.
The Mother of Dragons. Kira actually does Terras Kasi. She calls it out.
Well, it has.
Oh my gosh!
It has popped up here and there in the canon, sort of like the Achani martial arts, where it's it was developed in response to Jedi lightsaber, you know, to fight against, you know, if you were somebody who was not a Jedi and didn't have the Force, didn't have a lightsaber, and you had to still defend yourself in single combat against them.
But that being said, okay, let me read the Wikipedia real quick.
Yes, thank you. I was gonna.
This doesn't get you going.
Yeah.
Masters of Terras Kasi is a fighting game developed and published by LucasArts, which was released for the PlayStation in 1997.
Yikes.
In the game's story, which is set in the Star Wars universe, the Emperor seeks retaliation for the destruction of the Death Star and recruits the mysterious Arden Lynn to battle in the art of Taras Kassian, unarmed combat discipline against leaders of the Rebel Alliance. So, yeah, I guess Mara Jade's in it, so that's cool.
Yeah, there's a Tusken Raider in there, a Gamorrean guard. Yeah. Princess Leia's like a master of the staff.
Right.
It's pretty crazy.
And I think it's one of the you could be a Gamorrean in it. I remember that. Yep. Mara Jade was in it, and you could unlock like Slave Leia if you wanted to.
Yes, there was a stormtrooper, and you. I just remember like some characters, real simple button combinations and stuff. Like Arden Lynn, the master of Taras Kassi herself, dude, you could mm-hmm. not do a combo with her unless like you had 18 fingers. I had the combo list for all the characters written in like a binder, and you know, back in the day, you had to like wait for your AOL connection for 2 hours just to be able to get onto IGN and look up a few combinations. And I just remember like, how the hell am I ever supposed to get one of these combos down? So I pretty much gave that game up after a little while, but yeah, I did play a lot of it. I was going to have us watch the intro. It's not as interesting as I thought it was, but if anybody's interested in watching that intro,
just for the listeners, no other Star Wars character was put into another fighting game until 2008. So it took 11 years before Yoda and Starkiller.
And that 2008 game, that was the Clone Wars lightsaber rules, wasn't it?
Well, Soul Calibur.
Oh, that's right. Yoda and Darth Vader, respectively.
And then Star Wars, the Clone Wars lightsaber rules.
Yeah, Soul Calibur 4, was it?
Soul Calibur 4, yeah.
Yeah. On 360 had Yoda and PlayStation had Vader.
Yeah, and then I think The Apprentice, character.
Yeah, he was on the PlayStation version, I think.
I think he was on both, maybe?
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
That might be true. Because that was right around the time that Force Unleashed came out. And then mm-hmm. Force Unleashed 2, that was a bit of a mess by comparison. I shouldn't say a mess. They were both very fun, but like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there was some missed opportunity for like some really good combat in those games.
And that's the thing, right? Is like with when you come up with a weapon like a lightsaber, it's really hard to be like, okay, now we're going to talk about balancing the game.
Yeah.
So that it's not just one hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which actually, let's go back to the beginning of our conversation here.
Jedi
Survivor. You can actually, once you beat the game and do New Game Plus, you can actually do the one hit, one kill, who's next setting.
Yeah.
That's one of the things you can do. But it also works both ways. If you get hit once, you go down as well.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So in Jedi Power Battles, they have... they call it ultimate lightsaber, and you have to beat like survival mode or something, which is ridiculously difficult once again. And the cool thing about that game was every time you beat it with a different character, you unlocked a different extra, whether it was a map or, or like another character or something. Yeah. And you would also get new combos and force powers and things. So by the time you actually go to like survival mode, you might have a couple different characters to try it with. But when you beat that, you get what they call ultimate saber, and every normal enemy in the game is a one hit kill. But I might have to go back and play it, but I believe boss battles, your lightsaber's normal. So that your boss battle isn't just like a one hit and you're done. So that was kind of neat. I appreciated that. But it made the game a lot more difficult because then you go back through and you play it on hard mode with the ultimate saber, and you just like, you have to fight a lot more enemies. They're shooting a lot faster, et cetera, et cetera. So it kind of balances out that way. But yeah, I mean, I can't really think of a game where the lightsaber was always one hit, one kill. I'm sure there was, but I can't really think of one off the top of my head. Because even Force Unleashed, some of the heavier bad guys. They were able to block your lightsaber, where they could take two or three hits. I'm thinking Battlefront. Sometimes it'd be a one-hit kill, but a lot of times you got to hit someone more than once in Battlefront with a lightsaber. Which that's another missed opportunity, wasn't it? Oh. I feel like that should have been a lot of fun. Like, they had that whole Jedi versus Sith or whatever it was, Jedi heroes, hero battle, whatever. Oh my God, what a missed opportunity. anyway, I would say that I'm optimistic based on Jedi Survivor. I'm optimistic for the future of Star Wars video games if they can potentially get their crap together and actually put one out.
Absolutely. Couple years. Well, there is a plethora of people nowadays that are more willing to, you know, stick to the nature of the weapon, you know, in their choreography. So that's actually a good sign.
Have you really quickly, have you played the Darth Vader VR game?
I have, but I only do the lightsaber suite. I have not.
That's what I was going to say. The Saber Dojo. I mean, that is very, very cool. If you haven't played that yet, and I don't actually own it, but I was sitting in Bede's living room for a long time. It is super cool to actually feel like you're grabbing the lightsaber, and then with your other hand, you're actually force pushing or pulling another, like a blaster towards you or something. And it's like legitimately difficult. So,
it's hard to do, especially when you don't have like a quiet place to be, because you have to listen for the little robots, and you have to listen to where they actually are, turn your head exactly where they should be, and swing your saber exactly at the right time. It's actually really fun. I've spent many of hours just doing the lightsaber dojo. It's so much fun.
On that note, the story, I can't remember if I've actually finished the story or not, but I think I've gone through the first two, maybe, episodes. I can't remember. What are there, three or four or something like that? But it is pretty cool and creepy as hell to be there in Darth Vader's castle while he's having his temper tantrums and his PTSD, and it's a wild game. Very interesting and cool to sort of literally immerse yourself 360 degrees in the world. So anyway, this was a fun little just like walk down BS lane. If you would like to watch the videos that we talked about, I will make sure that I post the links in the description for this episode. And next week, hopefully we'll have some videos of us to watch and roast. And in the coming weeks, I sort of teased it, in episode 25, but, in the coming weeks here, I'd like to do some, maybe after we've roasted some videos of us, maybe we'll actually go back and turn our cameras on, do a little work with our sabers here, kind of show each other some of the stuff that we did in the videos or what have you, or whatever the case is. We'll be sabers in hand in one of these episodes coming up here soon. So there will be a video component to that, as well as an audio component. And as with any episode with us, you can always just listen or just watch and be completely entertained, or have something to make fun of. Either way, it's fine with me. Any eyes are better than no eyes. So, and ears. So, Alan, anything you want to add before we sign off?
No. All I have to say is bring your own saber.
Sabermartialarts.life. Bring your own saber.